All right, we'll call the meeting of the Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs Finance Committee to order. Representative Falk moves to approve the minutes of January 27th. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are approved. Members, we have another one. Oh, Falk talked to me, didn't move them both. Never mind. Representative Brown moves the minutes of February 28th for approval. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are adopted. All right, we've got the minutes taken care of. Today, members, we're going to do brief overviews. We'll stick to our hour and a half or hopefully less. We're going to hear first from the Department of Agriculture and then from Department of Veterans Affairs. I will tell you, and I'm open to suggestions from the committee as we go forward here. One of the things I've noticed, first of all, you have budget books here, and we'll start putting stuff in those. Your name is on them. Feel free to write on them. These are your notes. These are your books to keep, and you will get them back at the end of the year. We'll just bring them to your offices. You can do what you want with them, but they're your workbooks, and you'll have them every day. You'll notice the last few years, and I've noticed, too, it's gotten... we're basically getting less and less detail on budgets. And basically what we're getting is a lot of, for the most part, change items show up. And that's what the department here will talk about today is both departments, they have, you'll see the sheets, and most of those are change items, and that's what they're going to present. Unfortunately, change items, while we do have to make decisions on those and see if we agree with them or want to tweak them or whatever, we don't really get into division budgets much or see more expanded spreadsheets on things. So we're going to be working with our fiscal staff. In fact, Mr. Reinholtz, I have a little show and tell for you. I want to meet with you today or tomorrow. I've got a budget book that my roommate, Representative Rukavina, found from 1986 and 7 for the higher ed group. And it's amazing what used to be in those budget books and what the legislature used to look at in their oversight role. Now, we're probably not going to have time, and the department would probably stall us out until the end of the year if we asked for that much detail, but I think we can have some expanded budgets by division. Maybe we'll ask the fiscal guy how much detail he can provide. Maybe he'll bring in truckloads if we want. I don't know. But there is a big difference in the way budgets used to be done here and the way we've seen them the last few years. And I think this year in particular, with our budget deficits and our charge here to balance that budget, I think we need to get into a little more detail in all our departments that we oversee, whether it's AURI or Veterans or Ag or Board of Animal Health. We're going to take a look at them all, try and understand what they do. We're going to be asking them. As you saw if you were on the tour, I think the Department of Ag does a pretty good job of this. They have they basically define what the department's vision is and what their which direction they're going. But then division by division, what is their charge? What do they do? What do they see for future trends? Are we addressing those future trends? Do they have enough personnel? Do they not have enough personnel? You know, what are they spending their monies on that we send over there? And again, all this is basic government 101. If we go back and remember, the legislature actually sets policy. The legislature actually appropriates money. And the executive branch was formed originally to carry out the legislature's dictates. So whether we're cutting boards or groups or whether we're adding things, it's really up to us and the people we represent to transmit that to the departments and hopefully have them fulfill that duty on our behalf and on the behalf of the people we represent. So we're going to start here today. Again, this is going to be a very brief overview, although we'll take questions as we go along on these particular items if you have them, but then realize these items will also show up as we go division by division over the next couple of months in those division reports, too, and we can get into more detail on them at that time. But certainly we'll take questions as we go along, and hopefully proceed that way. So again, I'm open to your suggestions to us on how you want to proceed with these budgets this year. New ideas are welcome from everyone around this table, and certainly we want to come out at the end of the day with a budget that we can all hopefully support and move on. Any questions or comments before we get started? All right, you're up. Please introduce yourself and proceed as you may. By the way, this is a new day in the Department of Agriculture, too, because they have a PowerPoint. So everyone should be very impressed with this. I'm waiting to see. I don't know if Veterans has that yet, so we might have to work on them a little bit. We like visual aids in this committee. We like food samples when we get into visions. You know, I don't know if the dairy folks and...
Maybe if you don't fund our budgets the way we want you to, I'll bring in some peanut butter.
Okay. Peanut butter. Yeah, we'll all get 3 samples of peanut butter. All right, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Quinn Tini. I'm the Policy Director at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. And I just wanted to start, as we developed our budget, we really tried to focus on the mission of the Department of Agriculture. Our mission is to enhance our quality of life by ensuring the integrity of our food supply and the health of our environment and the strength of our agricultural economy. As you learned when you toured the department, we treat the different divisions in the department with a two-pronged approach. There's regulation and there is promotion. And this slide is just an overview of the budget for the department. As you may recall, the agriculture and its related industries account for 15% of all of Minnesota's jobs. And it's the second largest economic sector, but one of the smallest pieces of the total budget. The department budget this year is about $169.5 million. Shows as a 16.8% decrease from the 08-09 budget, but that's largely because there was a lot of one-time money for livestock investment grants and for next-gen energy. So it's really only a 5% decrease from the current appropriation level. I thought I would deal with some of the change items by first introducing what each of the division's responsibilities are, just to refresh you, your memory. I know you talked a little bit about those when you toured the department. The Pesticide and Fertilizer Management Division is one of our regulators in the agency. They regulate pesticides, fertilizers, and other crop outputs. They license applicators, and they enforce the pesticide laws, do misuse investigations. And they are $36.5 million for their total budget. You'll see that this is a fairly large increase from the 08-09 budget, and I'll explain that a little bit more. Partly that is because of the Clean Water Fund activities that we're proposing to do, and part of it is because of a fee increase that we're proposing. One of the change items that we're proposing for this year is to use the Ag Chemical Remediation and Response Account to pay for staff costs. Staff resources are very limited right now, and they're actually one of the significant factors that limit our ability to progress on ag chemical contamination cleanup. There's a backlog of these contaminated sites that are known, and we just haven't been able to fully get at them because of staff limitations.
Excuse me, do you have a copy of our budget page change items from your budget up there anywhere so you or Mr. Ernst can tell us what page we're on as we're going in the slides here?
I didn't go in order, Mr. Chair, which is why I passed out the...
Right, it doesn't have to be in order, but there's a lot more detail on the budget page than what you have on the slide, and we can look at both if you... Would just tell us which budget page you're on as you're describing it. Would be helpful.
Mr. Chairman, this one is page 19.
Page 19. All right.
This is page 22 of your budget book, the Ag Pesticide Dealer License. This is a new license requirement that would allow the Department of Ag to identify people distributing ag pesticides in and into Minnesota, and would require them to keep records and report sales of ag pesticides. If a person's already licensed as a pesticide dealer, no additional licensing will be required. Page 20. If you're already licensed as a pesticide dealer, no additional licensing will be required. But this is really just designed to get at people from out of state that are distributing into Minnesota and create a more fair and level marketplace for those already in compliance. Michigan has a similar system in place.
So this would license out of state folks that sell into the state.
It changes the point of reporting to us, and so that it catches the out of state people.
In the past, was this reported in the state they were at? North Dakota take these reports in the past, or did they report to us and we just didn't license them?
We didn't collect fees from them.
Thanks.
I think this is page 22 of your book, Pesticide Program-Based Funding. The governor is recommending increasing the base pesticide registration fee from 0.4% to 0.6%. This will generate approximately $1 million. He's also recommending increasing the minimum product registration fee for non-agricultural pesticides by $100. This would increase the registration fee from $250 to $350. That produces about $900,000. The fees in this area have not been increased since 1991, and we have increased the amount of demands on the services in this division, both by the legislature and by public demand. They're doing increased misuse investigations, increased water monitoring, increased data management, and this will allow us to do more in all of those areas. Waste pesticide collection is another one that we added last year.
And again, members, this is one of those areas, be a good example, that we will expand the budget when we go into this division, and we'll look at it and understand how many personnel it takes to do this, what kind of oversight is necessary for the county collection programs that we're into, how as we move forward, you see more and more lawn and garden chemicals, basically, the Walmart or Target type chemicals sold, and you're seeing increases on that labeling, and does that correspond then with the amount of activity and workload that we see in monitoring that increase in chemical use, basically from our homeowners and others? So, you know, we want to take a detailed look at this and understand, is that fee increase justified, and is it all going right here to this program, or is it going elsewhere? You know, what portion of that fee is paying for rent at the building, and what portion is other things? So it's a good example.
And Mr. Chair, you will note that the first one, the registration fee, the base increase, that will affect both ag and non-ag pesticides, but the minimum product registration fee is really geared solely towards the non-ag pesticides. The third part of this proposal is to create a dedicated non-agricultural waste pesticide account. Again, this ties very closely to the waste pesticide collection legislation that was passed last year requiring annual collection activities in each year in each county. Legislation also recommended that we reimburse the cost for the collection of waste pesticides. And so this dedicated surcharge will help provide ongoing funding for those collections. It's really designed so that the cost for collection and disposal are being supported by the products that are most likely to be collected. This is page 12 of your book. This is related to the Clean Water Fund. Governor is recommending several Clean Water Fund proposals. This one relates to drinking water protection, providing more funding to the Department of Agriculture to increase the efforts for drinking water, particularly for nitrates, which are widely present in vulnerable aquifers in Minnesota. This will allow us to increase the efforts in response to the elevated nitrate in ag areas where groundwater can be used for, or is used for, drinking water.
And when you say clean water funds, you're talking about the new 3/8 of a cent collection, correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
All right. So you're going to see that throughout the budget members, several million dollars from that fund. And so, again, we'll be discovering if this is new activity or if this is supplementing budget activities that are already going on. Again, remembering how we wrote that bill, it's not technically supposed to be supporting what we're already doing, but supporting new things. So that'll be some of the discussion as we move ahead, because, again, like I say, there's, what is there, $7, $8, $9 million in here from clean water total? You or Mr. Ernst know?
Almost $9 million.
$9 million. So it's substantial, and that's from that new 3/8 cents we're collecting.
Mr. Chair, I'd also like to note that the numbers for the clean water proposals will probably be reduced downward for the 2010 year. We had some technical difficulties in calculating the revenue collections because of the way that the revenue gets collected. So that will be, we're still working on revising those numbers for you. This is page 13 in your book. Also from the Clean Water Fund, the governor is recommending doing increased pesticide assessment and monitoring. We intend to use this funding for three purposes: conduct assessments and evaluation of actual practices and best management practices in response to the recent listings of acetochlor for two water bodies. Also to do monitoring for acetochlor and other pesticides in other surface waters. And finally, to add additional lab capacity for responding to emergency pesticide issues. It would also allow us to do more with early identification of elevated levels in various water bodies. On page 14 of your book, another Clean Water Fund proposal to deal with research projects and assistance. Future efforts for this funding might be focused on, again, research on best management practices, implementation, and effectiveness, targeting those practices to critical landscapes, and developing more precise info on non-point source contributions to impaired waters. This would allow us to do more on-farm research as well and pilot projects. Moving on to the Plant Protection Division, again, another regulatory responsibility. The Plant Protection Division is responsible for invasive species control and prevention, gypsy moss, emerald ash borer. We do crop pest monitoring like soybean rust, phytosanitary certification, as well as green vegetable inspection and seed certification. Their total budget is $13.3 million, and this is really only a small increase from last year. Page 24 of your book is this change item for wolf and elk compensation. This program is actually faced right now with $50,000 in unpaid claims. It's designed to reimburse farmers for livestock losses due to wolves in the northern part of the state and crop damage due to elk in the northwestern part of the state. And the governor recommends increasing the base funding for this program. The current funding is $100,000, and so this would be a total of $150,000.
Now, does the department also reimburse for goose damage, that type of thing? Or is that, does DNR, I guess what I'm asking, do we do all the reimbursement for crop injury with wildlife, or is any of that out of the DNR budget?
Mr. Chair, I believe that it's just wolf and elk from the Department of Ag budget.
Maybe Mr. Reinholtz, is that true? Does the DNR have their own budget for crop damage? And if so, I guess our question is, why are we just doing wolves and elk? And why don't they do it all over there?
Mr. Chairman, the DNR does have some funding for reimbursement for the wolves also.
Something we need to explore a little bit, I think.
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to get the committee more information on that. The other thing I would like to identify about this particular change item is that in the past budget, the Wolf and Elk compensation has been one account, and this year we're proposing to separate that into two different accounts so that Wolf claims will go into one account and Elk claims will go into the second account, and then funds would be allowed to carry over as there are fluctuations in the claims submitted each year. On page 32 of your book, also in the Plant Protection Division, Governor proposes to eliminate the plant pest survey for a general fund reduction of $200,000 per year. This program provides information on the distribution of an abundance of pests of Minnesota field crops, and the data is used as a reference for current and regional pest crop conditions. We believe that a lot of this work will actually be assumed by private sector crop consultants. And I should just emphasize that this does not affect the bulk of the invasive species control activities, such as gypsy moth and emerald ash borer or potato cyst nematode.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman, that is part of the change item on page 17.
So, again, this is one that I, in particular, and I'm sure the committee wants more information on. When I look and see that you're eliminating that much money, is that monitoring and trapping activities? Or is it just, we need to have much more detail on that.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to provide detail a little bit later. We actually, the change item reflects reductions in two different divisions, so I broke it out for my presentation in order to provide you that level of detail. The plant pest survey is one piece of that. That was just $200,000, and then when we get to another division, I will cover the second pieces of that. The Dairy and Food Inspection, again, another regulatory responsibility for us. As many of you heard yesterday in the Ag Policy Committee, we do a lot of the grocery store inspections, convenience stores. We inspect dairy farms and food processing plants, animal feed, and then, of course, food recall investigations, such as peanut butter. The total budget for this division is $22.6 million. This is, again, just a slight increase, 0.6 increase from the 08-09 budget. For this division, the governor recommends increasing the food handler and dairy facility reinspection fees simply to recover more of the costs actually associated with people who've already had violations. This is page 21 of your book. And again, it's just to recover the cost of following up with food establishments that already have had critical public health violations to make sure that those violations are corrected in a timely manner.
So it's for food establishments and dairy, so out on the farm, if you have to go back and reinspect.
Yes, food handlers and dairy farms.
And, what kind of a, I'm reading here, what kind of a fee would it be for dairy farmers to come back and reinspect? What would he be charging?
Mr. Chairman, I can tell you that it's a fee increase from $75 to $150 for the initial reinspection of any food handler with that's food handlers, I'm sorry. I guess I don't know the answer for dairy farms. I can find out for you.
All right, you can get us that. $100? So it's another $100 come back and reinspect. All right. What it is 45 now. You reinspect, you give them a bill for $45 when you go to the farm, and now you're going to give them a bill for $100. Is that right?
That sounds about right.
All right. That's what everyone's reading here. So
okay.
I'm looking at you for the answer.
I just skimmed down to my notes. I can't. I didn't want to page through all my other notes to find the answer.
All right.
For the laboratory services division, this is our lab that you all got to visit. The total budget for this division is $16 million. This is about a 4% decrease from 08-09. And we're not proposing any changes in that division. Then we leave the regulatory and we move on to marketing and promotion. Our marketing division is responsible for promoting biofuels, Minnesota Grown program, working with international markets to develop new markets, helping to showcase Minnesota foods at international trade shows and work with other companies. And we work with the commodity councils and provide technical support as well for livestock producers. The marketing and promotion division has a total budget of $6.89 million, and this represents about an 8.5% decrease from last year. We are proposing a reduction in this particular division. $97,000 per year reduction would eliminate Department of Agriculture's aquaculture program, some additional promotional activities, and reduce support for ag in the classroom by $10,000 per year.
How much is the total ag in the classroom budget?
Mr. Chairman, this budget is $10,000. This is for the support activities, travel, and some promotional.
So the total budget for ag in the classroom is $10,000. We're eliminating the total budget then. So it's not just a reduction, it's elimination.
And Mr. Chairman, though, we do have a position, excuse me, that's in addition to this budget, which we would keep the position. There is a private foundation that's picking up more and more of these kind of costs. They even pay for our staff to go to his annual conference meeting, for example.
Okay. Well, we can get more information on that when we get in that particular ag or marketing division. Representative Hamilton.
For ag in the classroom, isn't a lot of that voluntary? People go into there, volunteer their services to share their, as far as what they do on the farm, et cetera, et cetera. They don't turn in expenses for that, do they?
I don't believe so. Okay. Marketing Promotion Division also works with value-added agriculture, as I mentioned, such as biofuels. At the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, we issue ethanol producer payments, and we have for a number of years. In 2010, the regular payments will be $1.2 million, only to two plants, so we're nearly complete with those regular payments. During the last budget reduction phase, we reduced, I believe that was 2003, we reduced the payments and agreed to provide deficiency payments, and so we do have deficiency payments to continue making. In 2011, those deficiency payments will be made to 12 plants. And then the payments, both the deficiency and the regular payments, are due to be completed by 2012.
And members, we'll get much more detail on the ethanol producer payment program. We'll get spreadsheets out with plant by plant and when they come off and how much they get and what it costs. And we might even learn that plants are not making money right now, unlike an email we all received yesterday from someone in the legislature. So we'll do a lot of discovery on ethanol plants before the next 2 months is over.
A new proposal that the governor has proposed is to create a program called Ag 21, a 21st Century Agricultural Reinvestment Program, to provide grants and loans to fund emerging needs in agriculture, such as livestock investment and next-generation energy. And the program would be funded, page 10 of your book. The program would be funded by redirecting funds from the Dairy Profitability and Enhancement Program for 2010 and 11, and in 2010 and 11, the funding, the grants would simply be provided for livestock investment. Then beginning in 2012 and 13, additional money would be provided as funds become available from the ethanol producer payment program, and again, mostly those funds would be directed for livestock investment and next generation energy.
And where did that name come from, that Ag 21?
A governor's proposal, Mr. Chief.
Oh, I see.
Actually, the department, I think she's being too modest. She thought this up, Ms. Cheney, the name, but that's okay. When I met with the governor's office the other day, they told me, I'm kind of paraphrasing, but they said, we're not dead sold on that name. So if anyone's got a suggestion for a better name for it, and again, realize what it is. And I think, and I'm being halfway serious here. You know, whatever we want to name this fund, this was established a number of years ago, I think, when Representative David chaired the committee, Agriculture Committee, and Osmo was the Finance Committee chair. We basically have set up into our base those ethanol producer payments. So as they come off, we preserve them in our base for whatever we see fit, whether it's livestock initiatives, next generation energy initiatives, or whatever we see that is a rising star on the horizon that we might have to fund through agriculture, and that's related to agriculture. So we've done that right in this committee. It's something we want to really watch this year and make sure our colleagues understand that you know, if there's reductions, they're one-time reductions and not reductions to the base. But what's the appropriate name? Is Ag 21 right, or is it something to do with energy or economic development fund or whatever we want to call it here? So we love your name, but Representative Hamilton has a comment.
Well, Mr. Chair, I was just thinking Al 21 would be
good. Al 21 would be good. So that's, well, there's one suggestion. We'll keep a list of names. Representative Welty.
Thank you, Representative, or Chair Junkie, and to Ms. Cheney, I'm just wondering, did you say that the program would be funded by the Dairy Development and Profitability Program in 2010 and 2011?
Ms. Cheney.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, I did. The Dairy Profitability and Enhancement Program, I'll discuss more in detail a little bit later. We believe it's about $1 million per year program, and it's really, we believe that we've really provided consulting to a lot of the dairy farmers in the state, and so thought it was appropriate to reduce that by about 50%, so 500,000 is being redirected for livestock investment grants, and 500,000 will stay in that dairy profitability program, 500,000 per year. And that did come as a result of conversations with the dairy industry. They suggested that if they had to choose, that the livestock investment grants were a very exciting program for them.
Representative Welty.
Okay, well, I do have some concerns about that, because I know that that program is a very effective program, and from someone who represents a heavily dairy area in the state, and I know some of my other colleagues around the table do as well, I know that program has kept a lot of farmers on the farm, and it provides services for them, looking at finances and also just looking at their operation and what they can do better to improve production and a number of other things, animal health included. And I'm wondering, when this came about, was it brought to you actually by, you know, for instance, the Minnesota Milk Producers Association, or was it brought? Have you consulted with the groups that work with our farmers out in Greater Minnesota about their support for this?
Ms. Cheney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Welty, I will say that. Specifically, this proposal was not, we didn't go to the Minnesota Milk Association and ask them directly whether or not they wanted the funding redirected in this way. The governor's budget, the governor needed to make some budget reductions, and after a lot of discussions with groups across the state, we received a lot of compliments about the livestock investment programs, and the comments that we heard were that they were extremely supportive of the program. So this is the proposal that we developed in order to respond to those concerns and put that there might not be funding for that program. We wanted to make sure that funding went into that program for the 2010 and 11 year.
Representative Will.
Okay, just one last follow-up question. It's important for us to understand who is expressing the interest in diverting the funds from the profitability program into the livestock investment program, And when you say groups are saying that they're supporting this, could you please inform me of what groups specifically are supporting this?
Ms. Cheney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Welty, we have heard support from, maybe I was not clear in my earlier comments. We've heard support from Minnesota Milk and from a number of the other ag organizations, Farmers Union, Farm Bureau, all supported the Livestock Investment Grant Program and urged that we provide additional funding. I had additional discussions with individuals, and I don't know that I want to go much further than that. We just suggested that if we had to choose, that might be a good choice to fund the livestock investment program.
So it was either or is what it was. They brought it to them and said either we cut it or we can move it over here. What do you think? So
we will have the dairy people in on Tuesday, Representative Welty and members, and we will. There's a number of dairy initiatives throughout here that have been from the dairy reinspection fee increases and other things, and we will hopefully get their response to all of this on Tuesday of next week. Is that right? So we'll definitely bring up the dairy stuff again.
Mr. Chair, if I could just add, the one thing that we thought was important in this, the governor really wanted to make sure that the livestock investment grant would go directly to farmers, and so we did still preserve 50% of that dairy enhancement program.
And how much is going to livestock investment grants?
$500,000 per year, and the point was that the grants go directly to farmers as opposed
right.
to
so again,
staff.
Editorial comment, we had $150 million of applications last year for livestock investment grants. We have agreed to pick up 10% of that cost if they're funded. That's a fiscal note last year of $15 million. So realize $500,000 is not getting us very far. And I think this committee would agree. We need to come up with some ideas to get some money into that program this year. I'm certainly looking at, I think we discussed this earlier, but I'll reiterate it so we can all be thinking about it. The governor recommended $50 million in tax credits for Main Street businesses. I suggest that our farms, our businesses out in rural Minnesota, just like any Main Street business, and I'd like to see $10 million of that $50 directed to the Livestock Investment Grant Program or similar things in Department of Agriculture. And I will tell you again, I met with the governor's office last week and brought that up. They didn't say no. So let's keep working on that premise. Maybe we can find some money to help address this program and the needs. Again, realizing that's jobs on the ground. They'll go into Representative Magnus's hometown and they'll buy their products and they'll hire the carpenters that live there to build the buildings or the well drillers to drill the wells for a pasture operation or whatever they're doing. Mainly local, mainly jobs and future activity also once those facilities are in place. So we think, at least I think, and I believe the committee will agree that's a good use of that dollar. So bring that message back to the department, too. I know you're going to advocate with us for that, right? She's shaking her head yes, really hard.
Moving on.
You've got about 5 minutes. So I know I'm going to rush you now, but that's okay.
That's all right. The Ag Finance and Development Division has a budget of $23.2 million. This is a decrease from the 08-09 budget. Again, this is where the second part of that invasive species and pest management change item, Mr. Chair. We propose in this division to reduce some of the biocontrol efforts, eliminate the urban pest management program, and reduce the integrated pest management activities. And this totals $421,000 per year.
And again, I will say I'm very concerned about these reductions. I'm very concerned about who's picking them up. Is DNR picking up these activities? Again, members, remember, protection services, and in particular these programs, the Department of Agriculture is responsible for monitoring for diseases and pests and other things prior to them getting established in the state. Once they're here, then the DNR takes over with control. So if we're eliminating our charge with the pest management activities in the urban realm and other things. Is this just a reduction in the budget? We're still doing it, but somehow doing it more efficiently? Or are we eliminating some things that could cause us headaches in the future? And I know Chairman Eakin's concerned about that, too, over in environment. So,
the biocontrol efforts, Mr. Chair, are some cooperative activities at the University of Minnesota. The integrated pest management activities are, those are activities, programs that we do with farms to basically introduce good bugs to eat the bad bugs. We're reducing some of our activities in those areas. It's not, this reduction is in the Ag Finance and Development Division. It is the Plant Protection Division, which is the regulatory division, which does the activities regarding invasive species control and eradication. That is the division that does the gypsy moth, the emerald ash borer, potatoes, just nematodes.
All right, we'll get into more detail as we move through this later.
Again, also in this division is another Clean Water Fund activity. We're providing funding for the Ag BMP loan program to work with local units of government on water quality improvement projects. And then in the grants and administration section, we have proposed, as I mentioned, the $500,000 per year reduction to the Dairy Profitability Enhancement Program. Also a $100,000 reduction from the Sustainable Ag Demonstration Grant, and a $50,000 reduction from agency administration from the Finance and Budget Commissioner's Office Human Resources area. I apologize, but I had a little technical difficulty, so I don't have the slide for you on the Board of Animal Health, but I believe that you also wanted me to cover that area, Mr. Chair. The total budget for the Board of Animal Health is $14.2 million. The governor recommends reducing funding for the Board of Animal Health by $40,000 for avian pneumovirus, just to reduce the number of surveillance samples, $100,000 reduction for Yoni's disease to reduce the number of herd evaluations, and a general operating reduction of $322,000 per year. And we believe that those reductions are sustainable in the disease area simply because we haven't had any incidents. The governor also recommends providing additional funding for the bovine TB eradication efforts in northwestern Minnesota. 46 of the 67 eligible herds signed buyout contracts, representing 6,800 animals moved out of the tuberculosis zone, and it's very much exceeded expectations. The appropriated funds from last year will be sufficient to complete the buyout, do the expanded fencing, and make the first annual payment, which is due on June 30th. So this $200,000 per year will supplement those activities.
Are we overseeing in that Board of Animal Health the dollar per head surcharge on the cattle? Does that come into us and appropriate through Board of Animal Health?
Yes, Mr. Chair. It comes into the Department of Agriculture and distributed to the Board of Animal Health.
We want to report on that, too, and how that's going and in the future, not today.
Yes, Mr.
And what you're expecting for income there as we're looking at these budgets.
That concludes my presentation, Mr. Chair.
All right. By the way, we like the pictures, too, on the overhead. They're very good. Any questions to the department? Representative Tremba.
Thank you. I have two concerns, and one is Ag in the Classroom, and can you tell me how much that they would have to pay to continue with that? What's the dollar amount that is left over for somebody to pick up?
Ms. Cheney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Otremba, the $10,000 reduction covers promotional and travel activities. There is still a staff person at the agency that will do a lot of the work that the agency is involved in for
Ag. Is that a full-time staff person for just that, or do they have other duties too?
I think it's just that, Mr. Chair.
And we'll review that, Representative Otremba.
And following it up a little bit, we know that marketing is big, and when it comes into the elementary area, it's big, and so I'm really concerned that that program does continue, because that's what we talk about all the time now, is market. And my second question is about the dairy piece. We know that, I think, that dairy is very low right now. I think it's a 10 hundred weight, maybe 12. And so those dairy people are in really straits. And so I would hope that we could put more money back into it because of what's happening with the dairy industry right now.
Okay. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. There's been talk bandied about the wage freezes, hiring freezes, things like that. Are either of those items reflected in any of your budget proposals here?
Mr. Ernst, are we going to see more detail on what the department expects to save from hiring freezes or people you haven't hired, the openings that you might have that are unfilled? Can we establish that as we move forward?
Mr. Chairman, we haven't done any quantification of that yet. One thing we can do is look at vacancies to see. There are some of them, like, for example, food inspection vacancies that we would consider critical and we are trying to fill currently. But some of the other ones would give us a good indication. And then I'm sure through the payroll system we could calculate some step increases, for example, that won't be planned to be taken at the moment.
Maybe we can think about a report on that. Since the governor put his pay or hiring freeze on, how many people have been hired in the department? That'll be an interesting discussion. And why were they critical? And then what jobs might you not hire that you're not considering critical? I guess that would be good information for this committee. You can put that together for a future meeting.
We'd be happy to follow up on that, okay. Mr. Chair.
Anything else, members? Otherwise, I'm going to move to the vet. I do want to say, David, thank you for coming. Thank you for the overhead. We appreciate that. And before all my ag people leave that are sitting up here, I got an announcement to make. Apparently, people didn't understand what we were doing tomorrow. Okay? If you remember last year, we wrote the ag special bill here. We're going to write the ag special bill again. We posted last week that we wanted testimony from folks on research needs in the state of Minnesota. Last year it took 2 full days. There were so many of you wanting to testify. We had turkeys, we had small grains, we had Farmers Union, we had Farm Bureau, we had corn, we had ethanol, we had pork, we had on and on and on. To date, not one person has called to testify. So, either I'm to assume that all of the research needs are being met just dandily by our university, which is good news, or what we're going to do through Mr. Dewar here, we'll be setting up a second day because tomorrow's short notice, and he will personally be in contact with as many producer groups and members. You too, if you see these people in the halls, ask them. If you have an interest in testifying, and by the way, the corn and ethanol people today have indicated that they missed that posting, basically, and they are interested in some very detailed testimony on their research. We will be setting up another day in the next week or two. So if you would, if you have an interest, let us know. Otherwise, we'll just write it the way we want to on this committee, but we appreciate input from any other groups out there. So I just want to make that announcement in case you folks are leaving. And we're looking for the Department of Veterans Affairs. Here they come. And by the way, tomorrow, members, we will be hearing from the University of Minnesota, both the College of Agriculture and Extension. So bring your questions, your concerns for them. They are going to review last year's Ag Special. We'll have the language from the bill 2 years ago. And then they will be describing how they have fulfilled what this committee asked them to do over the last 2 years. And then we'll discuss where we need to go with them moving forward. And we'll spend as much time as it takes with the university tomorrow. We'll have Dr. Levine and Durgans here. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. I'm Mike Puglisi, the Deputy Commissioner for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. This morning, we will be presenting our fiscal year 2010 and 2011 department budget with governance recommendations. I apologize that we do not have a PowerPoint presentation for you, but as we go through the budget, you'll see we're hoping to get some IT funding, and I'm sure with that support, we'll be able to provide a spectacular PowerPoint in the future.
Okay, the Department of Agriculture wins today.
It is out today. I bring greetings from Commissioner Dyer and Deputy Commissioner Gil Acevedo. Unfortunately, they were unable to attend today. As you heard when you visited our department last week, they are involved with the CRIP investigation taking place at the Minneapolis Veterans Home. They send their greetings. Before Ms. Keel and Ms. Crom show to present, I would like to take the opportunity to point out a few items relating to our presentation. Our fiscal year 10 and 11 budget does reflect the reduction of our fiscal year 08 and 09 one-time funding of $10,452,000. Also, Mr. Chair and committee members, I would like to address the administrative changes the department realized as a result of last year's legislation. We were able to eliminate the financial management director duties and reassign to the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs financial director, which saved $115,000. We are going to be merging the HR duties for the entire department with the HR duties for the Minneapolis Veterans Home, which will save $120,000. We will be recognizing some lease savings as well. We're not sure exactly what that amount is yet. And we are holding open an office and administrative assistant position for myself and the commissioner with a savings of $50,000. And we merged a buyer position from central office with the Minneapolis Veterans Home with a savings of $48,000. Unfortunately, as a result of the merger with the Veterans Home, we grew dramatically in size. Now that we're over 800 staff, we have to have an affirmative action officer, which cost $70,000. So we're able to save $333,000 so far as a result of some efficiencies combining positions with the home. So that's positive, and we're hoping that we can increase or realize some additional efficiencies as we continue to go through the process of merging with the home. Everybody should have the slides in front of them, and if you'll please turn to the second page. Oh, great. Thank you.
Now, you said, repeat again, you said you're cutting, the one-time money was reduced by how much?
$333,000.
No,
those are the efficiencies.
That's the efficiencies for Veterans Home or the Veterans Home.
Yes.
Your one-time money decrease from last year was what?
Was $10,452,000.
Well, that's a decrease, but you are increasing your base budget request.
We do have some change items that we'll be addressing now.
Okay.
Yeah. Recently, we've been working very hard on our strategic plan, and hopefully within the next week or so, we'll be able to provide you the final product of that. And I'd like to, at this time, to share with you our mission and our vision. Our mission is dedicated to serving Minnesota veterans and their families. Our vision is fulfilling the needs of Minnesota veterans and their families by providing proven and innovative programs and services to maximize quality of life. We also included our core functions. I won't go over them with you, but they're there for you to review. Right now in Minnesota, we have approximately 410,000 veterans. Our World War II veterans are aging dramatically, so we're losing them off the rolls, but we're continuing to increase our numbers by the OEF and OIF veterans that are returning home. So there are a lot of unique and different needs that are out there. With our aging veteran community, they require, you know, different types of health care solutions. With our returning veterans, they're requiring different types of needs. They're looking for help with employment, with education, with some of the current medical issues that they're facing. So we have a lot right now going on within our department. There's a lot of growth, and it's been very positive, the relationship we've had with this committee. We work very closely with your chairman, with Jim Cleary, with others, to help us develop our programs and our services so that we can support not only the aging veteran community, but the younger veteran community that's coming back home. I did want to go ahead and just go over the agency budget activity. You know, before the merging with the homes, we were just basically the programs and services side. Now with the merging of the home, we have two program areas, the programs and services, which I'm the deputy commissioner of, and the veterans health care, which is the veterans homes, with Deputy Commissioner Acevedo at the lead there. We've made a lot of progress, you know, as we talked about with you when you visited our department last week. We've made a lot of progress with the veterans home. We're going to just talk numbers today, but I just felt the need to share with you some of the tremendous progress they've made within the past year. I haven't been as actively involved, of course, as Deputy Commissioner Acevedo has been, but we've got very fortunate in finding Gilbert Acevedo and having him come here to our state to take over the veterans' homes. As you all know, they were struggling. There was a lot of issues going on there. With him as the leadership, we've made dramatic strides. We've created a lot of issues, fixed a lot of issues, put a lot of good policies in place. The health care has improved tremendously, and now they're taking care of some of the smaller issues. Health care was paramount at first. They've got that under control. It's doing phenomenal. Now they're looking at some of the smaller policy issues about how we manage money and things like that. So it's very encouraging. Overall, our agency budget, general fund base for 2008-2009 is $129 million. Veteran Services general fund spending was $40.7 million. The total for the healthcare side was $88.3 million. Full-time equivalent, current FTEs, 1,030.4. On the Veteran Services side, programs and services, it's 80.4. On Veterans Healthcare, it's 950. That's just pretty much a big snapshot. At this time, I would like to turn to Ms. Keel and Ms. Kromschoder, who will walk you through the budget pages and address any of those particular questions that you might have. I'll stay available if you have any other questions. Thank you.
All right. Very good. Looks like we have some high school pages. Is that right? Just came in. Welcome. This is the Agriculture and Veterans Affairs Finance Committee. And what we're doing right now is just getting a brief overview of the governor's budget, what he's proposed for, in this case, Veterans Affairs is up now. And then over the next 2 months, we'll be looking a lot deeper, but you're going to hear from Veterans Affairs now what they're doing. So we hope you're having a good week at the Capitol, and don't have too much fun, though.
All right.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Committee Member 15, Hill Department of Veterans Affairs, and beside me, I have Sherry Kromschoder, who is our finance director, and if you have any questions on the budget, she'll be able to answer those for you. So we will start with what is slide number four. Two things. You should have been handed out a revised fiscal summary. Those were revised due to FTE reflections. There are no actual changes to the budget numbers on those pages. And then, since you were on our floor and had a more extensive background, we'll mainly focus on the funding and the FTE numbers with today's presentation. But of course, with any program, if you want more details, we can provide that. And as we go through, I will point out some of the groups we have here who can speak to things too if you have questions on some of our past programs. So with the first page, our first budget activity under the Veteran Services Division, that is under Deputy Commissioner Pugliese's purview, is our Veteran Services Administrative Budget Activity. You can see we put the difference between FY08-09 and FY10-11.
So, hang on, are you on this sheet now?
Our handout. But it does correlate with the narrative page 15 and your budget pages. But you'll see the activities under our Veteran Services Administrative Budget area, along with the FTE broken down by each division within that area. And again, if you want me to go through more specific details, just stop me and let me know. But you'll see under the services, we have the Commissioner's Office, Financial Management, Human Resources, Information Technology, our Public Affairs Communications, our Legislative Affairs, and our Veterans Preference Program.
Remember, this is page 15 in your budget book that you have in your three-ring binder. You've got those pages handy, and you can reference them as you're going through. That's helpful to us.
Under this budget activity, we did see the one-time reduction in our depleted uranium. That was $200,000 for 08-09. Our marketing and outreach, that was also a one-time of $400,000 for the biennium. And the peer-to-peer, which has been named the Veteran-to-Veteran Counseling Program, we had $25,000 one-time in FY09 for that program. So those are the one-time reductions out of that program area. Now we'll move to benefits and services, which the narrative is on page 18 of your budget book. Under this program area, you'll see the first one is State Soldiers Assistance Program. Again, that is the program that provides direct and emergency financial assistance to veterans and their dependents. Again, we did the FY08 to FY10-11. So you can see the difference in the funding for that program. We have 10 FTE.
And I just put an average monthly payout of $420,000 so you can see that this program is utilized by veterans in the state. Next is LinkVet. Again, this is our phone, our 1-800 number, 188 number. We did put the comparison with the budget numbers again, so you'll have a comparison between 0809 to 1011. And we only have 0.25 FTE that goes out of there because our SSAT staff also handle these phone lines. With the combining of these two phone lines, that as we were directed to do legislatively last year, we're still in the process of working that out with MinSCU. They have a Minnesota Online program, and so we're combining those two programs. We have an anticipated date of later this year, July 1. Next, under benefits and services, we have our state approving agency and OJT. These two programs we put in there, but we just wanted to draw your attention that they are both 100% fully funded by federal dollars. Next is our state veteran cemetery. Right now, we just have the one location in Little Falls. But if you recall, last year we came in with legislation to expand. We're still working on that. But right now, the funding has stayed baseline, and we have six FTE dedicated to the cemetery. Next is our GI Bill, and if you need further details on any of this, Ms. Megan Fitzgibbon from OAG, who we contract with to administer this program, is here, and she can come down and answer any of those if I'm not able to. But this is our last dollar in program, which again, that is used after all other financial benefits and services are administered to veterans going to school. It is, again, straight baseline funding of $12 million, and as I said, we contract with the Department of Higher Ed for the administration of this program. Next is the Surviving Spouse Dependent Education Program, formerly called the War Orphan Program. We did receive a one-time increase of $52,000 to add the spouses to that program. That will go away in 10 and 11. And again, the SSAT staff, we don't need a staff dedicated to doing this program. They also handle the applications and processing of that program.
And again, for all these areas under benefits and services, as we move forward over the next 2 months, we want to understand each one, what the costs are, what the FTEs are associated with them, and what change items are within them. You know, how many people does it take to do the state veteran cemetery work? And what's the proposal? So we're going to expand your budgets a little bit and look into each of these divisions. And I know your financial folks are very good at that, because I talked to her when we did the unallotments, and we went division by division, group by group, and I know the information's available, and I think it'll be enlightening to this group to understand how you function over there in a little more detail.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Faust.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quick question on those lines. On page 21, you've got $6 million in 2010, $6 million in 2011. It says transfers. Where is that money being transferred to, and what is it for? Thank you.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, could you have Representative Faust repeat?
Representative Faust, repeat your question.
I sure will. On page 21, we've got transfers of $6 million each of the 2 years of the biennium, and I'm just wondering where that is transferred to and why.
Mr. Chair, Representative Faust, I'll let Ms. Kramshorter handle that.
The $6 million transfer in each 10 and 11 is our Minnesota GI Bill, and that's a transfer from the Department of Veterans Affairs to the Office of Higher Education to manage and fund the GI Bill.
And Representative Faust and others, we want to get a handle on that again, because remember, last year we had a number of dollars put in that and a significant number not used because we had federal benefits come through. So we want to understand, are you putting that there in case again this year and setting it aside, or do you know for sure that this is going to be beyond, this is what we need beyond what the feds are doing? So
we do not know for sure at this time.
Right. So that's something we'll try and discover in the budget process, how we can earmark something in the future if we need it, but not necessarily throw it into our one-time or even our base money, and I don't know how we're going to do that yet. But
Mr. Chair, the Office of Higher Education does do comprehensive reports on usage and utilization, so if you need that from them, they'd be happy to.
We will want that, and hopefully you can round that up when we go through this in more detail down the line.
Sure. Okay, we'll go back to the slide presentation. We're on slide number 8. We finished up with that, I'm sorry, for the GI Bill. We're on slide number 9, which is, last year it was
passed as the Case Manager Program. We have titled it Minnesota Service Corps. The Corps stands for Case Management Outreach Referral and Education. This program is the one we have contracted with Mason Social Services to provide a comprehensive program to, for veterans, family, military members who have maybe a a compilation of issues that can't be handled by just our SSAP program. So we refer, and Mr. Benson is here from Lutheran Social Services as well. If you're more interested in how the program has worked for them, he is here. I know time is of the essence, but
where's he at? There he is. He's waving over there. So, and again, we're going to get from Lutheran Social Services, hopefully, as far down the budget process as possible, an update from them and an estimate on what they think their future needs are going to be, because it's such a new program that we know it works, but we're going to need a report from you in March, probably sometime towards the middle of March.
Okay. Next, Mr. Chair, we'll move to our Claims and Outreach Division. On your narrative pages, that's page 22, but on your slide, it's page 10, or slide 10. Under there, we have our Claims and Outreach and Tribal Veteran Service Officer Program. The Claims and Outreach last year received a $250,000 ongoing appropriation. That is the only money they have received. Otherwise, we use money from our admin budget to pay for the staff in that area. Our Tribal Veteran Service Officers, that's a fairly new program as well. They did receive a specific line item allocation, and you'll see there that it is a flat base funding of $1.5 million each year, and I have the FTEs outlined on there coordinating to each program. The next slide, slide 11, we get into our Higher Education Veterans Program, and as you get down in our presentation, you'll see there is a change item for this. Again, it is a straight-based funding of $2.1 million each year, and we have 15 FTE there. However, of that 15, one is an interagency agreement with MNSCU, and that's the the supervisor of that program. Next is our enhancement and operational grants. These are to county veteran service officers. The difference between them is the enhancement grants are used as a competitive open application process, where the operational grants are given staggered to CDSOs on a triennial basis, and it helps them update their office equipment. And you'll see that the Legislative Affairs Division also manages this program. So it's not a dedicated FTE, it's just a part of the Legislative Affairs Division's duty.
And as we move forward, probably we'll get a list from you on what the money the last biennium was spent on for this, so that committee can get an idea of what this is going out the door for, mm-hmm. and helping our county veteran service officers, so we can get maybe line items and dollar amounts that went out the door for this to be helpful.
Would you like, Mr. Chair, would you like that in a follow-up, or do you want us to report back?
We'll get to the claims and outreach activities, and we'll get it that day.
Okay.
I'm just giving you a heads up, maybe put that list together.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Our next slide is slide 12, and here we have the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans and the Veterans Service Organizations. Both these programs are pass-through grants from us to them. Both MACV and several representatives of the service orgs are here, so if you have questions about how they use their budgets and what they're for, they're happy and standing by ready to answer those questions as well. But you'll see what their base funding is that they get as a pass-through grant from us. Additionally, though, MACV, you'll see that they received a $750,000 one-time, but their base funding ongoing is $250,000. Now we're going to switch over to the home. So on your narrative pages, that's page 27. On your handout, it's slide 13. Again, this front page you saw last week when you were at our fifth floor. Quick overview of the homes, of average age, and top diseases at each home. So we'll move to the next slide, slide 14. When we combined with the homes, we, as you heard from the Deputy Commissioner, we did some merging of positions. So you'll see that this slide on the Veterans Healthcare Administrative Budget Activity looks very similar to the programs and services, because we do support services. I'm 50-50, Ms. Cromstoder is 50-50, and we have that several positions between the two. We just, for illustrative purposes, wanted to show that there's functions in these areas. The next slide, we'll start with the home and service falls. The homes do receive one general fund appropriation, but they are then divvied out by homes. So when you see the operating base, you'll see that we have a comparison between 8 and 9.
but you will not see a specific budget page that outlines what each home gets because it's one appropriation.
But you you do have those budgets, right?
We do, absolutely.
And what we'll probably do is when we, again, as we move forward over the next couple of months, we will obviously have the homes for a day or two before us, and we'll probably ask the directors to come in at that time and present their individual budgets to us so we can take a look at each home and understand the differences in cost down at Laverne versus a Silver Bay, a different type of building and style versus Hastings, an old regional treatment center. And I think it's good for us to see what it costs per patient in these different types of facilities, and we're going to take a look. So, and we want to meet our directors. We want them to come down and say hi to us. So we'll have them in members as we move forward. Representative Posh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question. I'm looking at the FTEs here, and we see about a reduction of 100 FTEs from the current biennium. And we've heard discussion that one of the problems that we've had is unfilled positions, and then the OLA reports with increased use of overtime in the recent years. How are you going to reconcile those competing interests between reducing your FTEs and addressing the concerns at our homes?
And just to follow up on that, again, we see there's 300 some thousand in cost savings because of, obviously, these two people right here are shared services with Department of Veterans Affairs and the homes, but that doesn't certainly explain the 100 FTE, so that's a good question.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hosh, I would like to add a comment at this point. We did provide some revised budget pages and made reference to the change in FTE. That budget page is actually inaccurate because it did not take into consideration the governor's recommendation, change item to maintain current service levels, which Ms. Keel will talk about shortly. The true FTE difference is actually for the agency would be 39.8, I believe.
From 09 to 11, it goes from 950 to 900.5 on the new sheet. So there's still 50 FTEs reduction, which we want to get an understanding on.
Yes, and that's something that we are also working on to look at other ways of doing that. We have some possibilities of looking at alternative revenue sources that we can tap into, also looking at our efficiencies and looking at positions that we need to fill or do not need to fill.
Okay. Well, we're not answering your question yet, Representative Posh, but as we move forward, that's really going to be something we want to focus on. So, yes, Representative Fowler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was at a meeting a little over a week ago where a fellow representative that I'll leave unnamed said that it cost us at least, and I think this is a direct quote, at least 150%, maybe twice as much to take care of a veteran in a state run or in a veteran's health care center compared to the same person if they were in a private facility. And do you happen to have any numbers along those lines? And if not, could you please get them for me?
Mr. Chair, Representative Faust, Deputy Commissioner Acevedo could try to supply you with those numbers, but I know the cost of care of an average veteran at the Minneapolis home is $10,000 a month, and that's pre-average of other private nursing homes you see. Where the additional costs come in, especially at the Minneapolis facility and Silver Bay, because they are older facilities, is the maintenance that goes into that. So when you average out what it costs to operate the home, it does show that they're a little bit more expensive than the average home, but it's mainly due to the age of the buildings, not the actual resident care calculation.
Perhaps another good exercise, and I know my staff is taking notes on all this. What we want to do is one day when we're into the veterans' homes for the day or two we do that, we want to look at, maybe give a, someone can talk to the committee of how a veteran pays to be in these homes. Talk about the federal voucher. Talk about which of our regular nursing homes across the state accept vouchers, and because they do. Veteran vouchers are utilized in other facilities too, not all of them. Why would some take a voucher? Why would some not? And just talk us through, if a veteran needs long-term care, what are their options in the state? And there's a lot of options besides veterans' homes, obviously. So if you can think about that and have your other deputy commissioner put something together on that, anticipating maybe a 15-minute forum on that when we get to that date.
We will do that, Mr. Chair. Back to the handout of our slide presentation. You'll see each home is broken down, and we did give you the general fund operating budget, estimated receipts for patient pay, and estimated receipts for federal per diem. Again, those are only estimated. Actual receipts, we can always look back and give you those concrete numbers. I will fast forward, given our time, to the last, to our change items and go through those. Our change item summary start on page 10 of our budget book. The first one is information technology. You will see under on the slide what the recommendation is, what we want to do with the money. If you need more details, Deputy Commissioner Filiaki has taken the lead on this change item. He can step in and answer any questions. But the fiscal impact, bottom line, is $980,000 in each year going forward to help us meet our outstanding IT needs. Next is the higher education campus rep. This is not new funding for 10 and 11. They are funded in those programs, so this is a tails issue for 2012 and 2013. But what we are asking is just to repeal the sunset date on this program, the calendar date, not the numerical date. We are still asking that the numerical state, numerical number stay, which is 4,000, if that drops below, if the veteran population attendance in schools drops below 4,000, the program will sunset. The next change item is patient mental health, and that's page 9 of your budget book. You will see that the request is to expand the mental health program. I'm sure this summer in the news you heard all about the resident-unresident incident we had out at the home, which only highlighted the need for having a full-time mental health person there instead of having someone from Minneapolis drive out to that home. So that is the change request here, and to expand those mental health services, you'll see that is a $220,000 request in each year of the biennium. The next change item is repair and betterment, and that's page 8 in your budget book. This request is not new. It's something that the homes have come forward with before. It does allow the homes to keep up with, you know, the repair of a window or new carpeting, if a room needs carpeting, a bed for a new resident. It's different from asset preservation, which you see in the bonding year.
Can you give me your why this is showing up as a cash item? Is it because the governor has not recommended a bonding bill for the next 2 years? Typically, we see these things come through bonding bills. I know we did last year. We looked at all this when we went to the homes. The bonding committee traveled, and we looked at all the safety and health improvements and all the things that were needed. But again, the governor, I believe, if I'm correct, has not recommended a bonding bill. So is he now peppering some of these items throughout budgets, including yours?
No, Mr. Chair, no. Repairs and betterments is different from asset preservation. And asset preservation is what you see in the bonding bill. And those have to have, as you know, a 20-year lifespan on them to qualify for a bonding bill. Repairs and betterments are more of those one-time things. They don't meet the definition of what you need for a bonding bill. So like I said, it could be a window replacement or a new mattress in a couple rooms at a home. It's more of those as-needed items. Some of them are for bigger items, like the Hastings home right now is doing a wall replacement because they have water leakage. So there are some big-ticket items that come out of repair and betterments as well.
Well, we'll look at it. I'll check with the bonding committee and see what might be bondable here, too,
okay.
Because that's windows and walls and floors are certainly 20-year life items for a lot of that. Even when Representative Hosh does it, you know, they'll last 20 years.
Sometimes. Mr. Chair, we were given just a general guideline that if it's going to be a complete window replacement for the homes, that's bonding, but like an individual, if one was break, then that's what falls under repair and betterment.
Just the glass you're talking
about? Exactly.
Okay. Well, again, if we can get more of we'll need a more detailed list on that.
And then our last change item, which is slide 24, but in your budget book, page 7, it is a request to maintain our current service levels, and this is out at the homes. Again, the homes have seen an increase in what it costs for compensation of nursing care, fuel, utilities, food, pharmaceuticals, and the fiscal impact is $1.8 million in FY10 and $3.4 million in 2011.
So does this have a built-in salary increase for the workers at the homes?
Mr. Travis, Ms. Brown, short answer.
The maintain current service levels does factor in a 3.25% increase, as we were explained to process this budget by Minnesota Management and Budget, I believe we are now.
Is that 3.25?
3.25, and that is to cover per year, and that is to cover insurance and salary step increases, cost of living increases.
How much would be the salary increase part?
You know, that would depend on what is negotiated through contract.
Okay.
Those are labor contracts.
All right, we want those numbers, what you're building in for labor, salary increases, and then beyond that, the benefits and other things. Mm-hmm. So we'll need that. Representative Hamilton.
It doesn't have anything to do with nursing homes or anything, so.
Yeah.
Is it all right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
Thanks.
No. This is a concern that a constituent of mine had, and if it's been addressed, we can move on, and if not, I want a bill drafted. She called her husband. She's a surviving spouse. Her husband has since passed away, and he is a veteran, and he was actually a POW, and they had a license plate on their car, and she was very proud of that fact. When he passed away, she could no longer, by law, keep that license plate. Has that been changed, you know? And if not, I want a bill drafted, because she was, like I said, very proud of that fact, and she wanted to display it as well. And so if you could address that, please.
Mr. Chair, Deputy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hamilton, I'll talk with public safety on that. Tom Evans over there, that hasn't come our way yet, that it's an issue. I'm sure it's a simple legislative change. Typically, the plates, if they're specifically assigned for a veteran, they don't carry over when the veteran passes away to the spouse. But I'm sure that's something we can address easily legislatively.
You'd follow up with Representative Hamilton. I know you're good at that. Another issue, Representative Hamilton, similar to that, that we're working on right now, too, is a disabled veteran gets a break on their property taxes because of, depending on their level of disability. If that veteran passes away, like in your case, I think there's maybe a 1 or 2 year, maybe 2 years that the widow can continue and then automatically goes back. Makes no sense. Most of these widows are aged and don't have the ability to pay, yet we ramp them back just because their spouse died to their old property tax rate. And that's something that should be changed too, so that that continues until no one's living in that property. So there's a number of those issues, and we look for the department to help us identify those too, because we're happy to advocate on behalf.
Definitely, Mr. Chair, Mr. Hamilton, Representative Hamilton. We'll I'll get with Tom Evans from Public Safety. We'll talk and we'll follow up with you.
Thank you. Other questions? Comments? Are you getting bills prepared with these budgets?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, our bill is done in intact finance. I'm not sure what the release date will be, but it is
coming out shortly. You'll be in contact with us when they're routed our way.
Yes.
All right. Well, members, tomorrow, University of Minnesota Day, for whatever length it takes, half hour, hour, hour and a half, I have no idea. If someone does come forward to testify, we'll let them go tomorrow. Otherwise, we'll set up another day on that. Next week, Tuesday, is Dairy Day. And no further business, we're adjourned.